Jayama. So the main subject, I suppose, is blossom like a flower. And there's so much we learn just on, actually in everything in nature. As Sri Aurobindo says, spiritual thought is crammed in matter's forms. So the original Veda is in the heart of the Supreme. And that Veda, with that Veda, that is the secret knowledge, he has impregnated matter. It is only at the third level when it is rediscovered by the rishis and they write it in terms of shlokas, etc. But the original Veda is hidden in matter. That's the whole secret. So if we know how to read the script of matter, we'll understand so much about God. And one of them is very simply a flower. So very simple things, flower, first thing needed is a seed or a graft. The seed is sown in us by the divine. There is seed in everyone, the divine seed in everyone. Nobody is exempt from that. But then it needs the right soil. So the soil is provided by culture, heredity. All these things go into the making of the soil. Heredity is important in that sense, and the culture and the civilizational values, some of them nurture the seed of the divine, some don't, some stifle it, etc., etc. So that's the soil and the seed part. If the soil is too porous, meaning thereby, oh, anything is fine, then the seed doesn't grow. If it is too hard, too rocky, again it doesn't grow. So it has to be of the right constitution. Then the second thing that a flower or a tree teaches us is that, well, all authentic growth is from within outwards. This is a lesson we have forgotten because we live in McDonald's and KFC fast food culture. So we also believe spirituality can be practiced as a fast food. Go, pay some money, learn a technique, do some breathing, do some meditation under some guidance for I don't know what's the current rate going on. And you'll grow into spiritual being. It's a nonsense. Right from the time of Buddha till today. If this was true, people have wasted their breath and time and energy. Sri Aurobindo in writing 35 volumes and the mother in nearly, 33 volumes. This is such a nonsense going on, I must say. You pay some money, learn some technique, and there you are. No, it's a feel-good factor. There is a difference between feel-good and authentic spirituality. You feel peace, that's fine. Because we don't know what really peace is. When we know the true peace, then this will look, oh, we used to call this peace. So the real peace is a descent from the divine, which is something so wonderful, marvelous, powerful actually. Peace is so powerful. So this is one thing, that first the inner, it grows from inmost to the inner to the outer. It's not like polishing the exterior, teaching some good manners, good behavior from which we judge a spiritual person. We cannot. Durvasa Rishi is spiritual even though he is prone to anger. So there are many such instances. So outer is the last to change. It must be from inmost. So what is Sri Aurobindo's recipe for this? First discover your psychic being, the inmost. If that is not discovered, all other experiences can go this way or that way. They can feed the titanic ego in us, that I am a spiritual man. They can feed ambition and they can feed vanity. And really, instead of taking us the right path, they can lead to the downward path. Just like in the case of Ravan, who was a bhakta and everything, but we see how he declined and fell. So the center, the seed has to be discovered. It disentangled in the mesh of ignorance. So we have to discover it. That's the original teaching of the Vedanta. Discover the divine within us. And that's the first important step, the psychic being in us. This one part. Then, yes, as the psychic being is discovered, the beauty is that though this divine portion is the same in everyone, yet it has its own unique mode of expression. The Gita uses the words Swabhava and Swadharma. Swabhava is the divine impulsion in each one. So each seed must express itself in its own unique way. When we discover it, then, it begins. The journey starts. Before that, we haven't started the journey. Okay, so that's the seed, the soil. And then there is something very, very beautiful from a flower that every time I see, I marvel. You throw anything in the mud, flower will take it and blossom. That is something which trees teach us, plants teach us, but most of all flower. And the greatest blossoming takes place when there is the worst kind of mud. You look at the lotus. Where does it bloom? It doesn't bloom in heaven. Well, heaven is the archetype. But where all mud and mire. So if life meets us with all these things which are thrown at us, we must know that God has chosen us for something very beautiful. But the catch lies here, that the flower does not keep looking at the mud and keep complaining, oh my God, this, see what people are doing to me. No. If it does that, it'll droop. It looks to the sun. It keeps climbing toward the sun. Whatever be the resistance, it knows my journey is to the sun. So that's what Sri Aurobindo says, keep open to the mother. So if you keep open to the mother, whatever people or world may throw at you, it'll only end up feeding this blossoming. So this is something very beautiful one learns from the flower. Receive all that comes and turn it into, as Sri Aurobindo says, the rule of divine living is to turn all things to honey. So this is something very beautiful one learns, and to stay open to the mother. And then whatever one receives, flower shares it with all. It doesn't share it for a prize. It's my own very strong feeling, maybe an idealism, but I feel spiritual knowledge should never be sold. It cannot be sold. It should not be sold. There should be no price tag attached to spiritual wisdom. Mother and Sri Aurobindo never did this. Nor did they give any shortcuts. Very clearly, one should be very clear on that. If there was any such shortcut meditation where, you know, in 3 days you will have some hyper experience, then they would have just written. They knew everything about everything. And then they show us how to walk the path, meaning thereby it's a journey. From the seed to the tree or the flower is a journey. It's not like an artificial flower you create. It may look alike, but there is a difference. And that difference is of the living something which a flower, real flower, catches. So it's a journey, and one has to understand that for a long time, nothing may happen. One has to be patient, because that's the journey of the soul in this blossoming. But once it receives, it shares freely. So, flower, as mother has said, it's frank, it shares all. It doesn't make distinction that, oh, you're a person who can pay me more, therefore you can be closer to me. No. It shares with whoever is ready to receive. It may be a rich person or a poor person, that's not the criteria. It's not the other way around or this way around. It's whoever is ready. This adhikar bhed has been lost in today's times. So it's very paradox, ironical, and I find it little, at a personal level, very strange that, you know, now you are enrolled into a spiritual course based on the money you can pay. It's so silly. You may not have the adhikar at all. And if you have the adhikar, you may not be able to pay the money. Fortunately, divine is there and it overrides all these conditions, and authentic spirituality does not necessarily develop in an ashram or in a, you know, close, secluded setup. It develops very spontaneously, like flowers growing in the wild, and some of them grow very beautifully. So this is what we must remember, and when we receive what we receive, we must share with all, with equal sense. So this is the background of blossoming like a flower. With that we come to this particular flower, psychological perfection. And that takes us to the conditions that are needed for a flower to bloom. There are conditions. You can't put, you know, any kind of air. It needs air, it needs water for it to grow. So what are these conditions which help us to blossom? Fortunately, there are no outer conditions. Outer conditions may help, they may hinder. And mother speaks about it, that people come to ashram and they may take it now easy and life for granted. That's why most of the places where I have been, at least to Math and Swamiji's, I have seen people just very close contact with plenty before coming to Sri Aurobindo, that aspiration is missing. The moment you wear a saffron cloth, you believe that, oh, okay, fine, you are already stamped as Swami. No, that it can be very misleading, that because I have come into a so-called spiritual life hub, therefore, you may be right next to a charging station, but you have to put your charger in. It doesn't automatically charge. So one may be right anywhere, and Mother and Sri Aurobindo speak about it, even with context to the ashram, that living in the ashram is not enough. So there are no real outer conditions, or rather any outer condition can become a feeder to the spiritual life if we have the right attitude. So the important thing is about cultivating these right attitudes, which often we miss in these, as I said, age of fast food, that people walk in 3-day course, 5-day course, 1-week course, because you are not bothered about what are the right inner conditions. And if the right inner conditions are like the climate, atmosphere around which things will develop, if you don't have the right atmosphere, it won't blossom. And in that, one of the flowers that best captures these inner conditions is the flower that the mother has named as psychological perfection. So it's the champak flower, as we know, 5 petals, and there are 3 of these. One is the champak flower, which is called as psychological perfection. Then there is another one which has 5 petals around it. There is another which is mother has named as divine perfection, or supramental psychological perfection. It's the golden champa. So there you have 4, 4, 4, where she speaks about the center is the supramental, then there are 4 which are the inmost, and there are 4 around which are little bigger petals, which are the inner being, and then there are 4 outer, which is in the outer being, which are the biggest petals. So this is the, and she gave a very interesting meaning to the supramental psychological perfection. We'll come to the champa a little later, this golden champa, lovely fragrance. So she gave a meaning to the golden champa. This is the one which is psychological perfection. And there is another one which is supramental psychological perfection. So there the mother gives a very interesting meaning. How to know that there is a state of psychological perfection inside? Is there some kind of a outer expression of it? And then she says something very interesting. Supramental psychological perfection is to smile under any circumstances. As simple as that. So often, for example, if I use this in my medical checkup, that, well, if somebody walks smiling into a doctor's office, you can be sure whatever be the problem, if you don't put in fear, the fellow will come out. It's a free test, medical checkup. So rest is all money game. To smile under any circumstance, we may add all circumstances, that's the perfection. Because you can smile only when all these elements of psychological perfection are within you. So what are these elements? So each flower, see, mother saw the Veda in the flowers. Some people have written all kinds of names for these flowers. There are books, no? Which have come out. Blossom Like a Flower is a website, and there are different books also have been written on it. I am waiting, wishing, hoping that somebody would come with a name, Veda of the flower. And incidentally, first time I am openly throwing the idea, because it is the Veda in everything, and Veda in a flower is not some new term. There is a term used in Ayurveda, it is called Pushpa Ayurveda. There is a term like that, the flowers which heal. And this is the supramental psychological perfection. So they heal, you can see 4, 4, 4. So they heal not necessarily by their extract. That's a much later thing. Flowers heal by their fragrance. Flowers heal by their presence. They just bring a change inside. So people try to take an extract that's honestly still crude. You don't have to do it. There was a very nice movie in which there is a lady in coma, I have forgotten the name. But it's true that, you know, when she's just not responding till they put Shivli flowers near her pillow, the flowers with which she connected when she was very young. Do we notice some typical fragrances which we have connected with as children? Very unconsciously. And they have a deep impact because there is a whole biology and neurology behind it. Olfactory now closest to the brain, but I will not get into it. So flowers by their presence, flowers by their fragrance heal. Mother has used, she would smell a flower and she would get the energy of it. They transmit qualities. So making an extract is later. It may help, I'm sure it helps. But simply their presence, because they embody certain things which they can transmit. How did mother heal through flowers? That's what she used to do actually. She didn't make extracts and give. What she used to do when people would go, they would give her some flowers, which often reflected their state of consciousness. One of the stories where a lady on her birthday, she had a flower in hand which started drooping and she was feeling a bit embarrassed. Then she thought, anyway, this is my state right now. So she offered it to mother. Mother held the flower in her hand. She said, mother, I am sorry, this is the only one I could get. Mother smiled and took it, and she was caressing the flower all through while she was speaking to this lady. And within few minutes, the flower blossomed, bloomed back. They are such a, and she would give the flowers which are needed for us. That's how the blessing, and then they dry up naturally, and then she would keep, which is the blessing packet. It's the simplest way. We don't have to look for anything else. Just simply looking at a flower, keeping it nearby, its fragrance, and then of course when they dry up, special flowers we all have kept, I know, I'm sure many of us have kept special flowers given by special people when we are too young. And they carry such a deep meaning. So flowers communicate, they transmit vibrations, and if we are receptive, we receive it, and it's very helpful. So what does the flower called Champa communicate? What is it trying to tell us? So its five petals embody the five qualities. And as I said, without this fast food culture, actually, if you ask me, is destroying authentic spirituality. I'll go one step further. Give money, do a course, 1 week course. There's a story in Prashna Upanishad where six yogis who are already yogis, but they want to learn more. So they go to Rishi Pipalad. They say, we want to know more. Something more. So he says, okay, you come here. I'll teach you if I know what you are asking. But for 1 year, you just stay here and practice austerity and right living. Then after 1 year, I'll take your questions and teach you what if I know about it. Just imagine, that's the kind of preparation. Nowhere disciples were just given this kind of, you know, handout of knowledge. It doesn't work. It's a long journey. So this psychological preparation is so important, which they are not talked about anywhere. It's completely missing in the spiritual discourse. There are methods, there is philosophy, there is metaphysics. But they are the most important. You don't have the right environment, flower will not blossom. Instead, they say external environment. Sit in a quiet place. Where to find it? Even Badrinath, you will see the last tea stall on the planet Earth, something like that. You know, where is the quiet place? Mount Everest is getting crowded. The quiet corner is inside. So these five petals each represents a necessary, we may say, indispensable quality or attitude for our blossoming of the psychic within. And the first among them is aspiration. As we know, aspiration is represented by a flame. It's fire, and this fire always leads us upward and forward. That's why the word used for fire in Hindi and Sanskrit is Agni. And from that comes a Hindi word called Age, and a Bangla word called Agun, and a Russian word which also is similar in sounding, Agni. Agni. Automatically, it is light and heat, and it raises everything upward. It is its nature. It just can't help it, and it purifies. So often people ask, what is the way to purify? Because all of us carry many impurities inside. Light up the flame of aspiration. It will do what Lord Ganesha does. Breaks down all obstacles. If there are more difficulties, more the aspiration. You see this aspiration flower. Typically, you'll see it at night. And when there is night, then in the morning when you go near the tree, you will see the ground is filled with this aspiration flowers. And they fall on the ground and they will have this little stem upward, red stem, white flowers, and they will look like, you know, as if they are flames pointing towards the sky. So if there is a difficulty, parijat. If there is a difficulty, if there is a problem, outer, inner, anything, don't think so much about the problem because it will multiply. Whatever, there is a law of life that whatever we pay attention to increases. People who keep complaining, paradoxically the difficulties increase. So what is the method? Light up the aspiration, make it soar higher and higher till everything burns down. It has the capacity to melt everything. You raise the heat and even iron will melt. There is nothing. Whole creation can go to blazes if you really, aspiration can join with the divine. So this is the first thing, aspiration. And it is the leader. That's how in the Vedas it is described as Agnir Otaram. So it is the one Agni Mide Purohitam. So it is the leader of the march. Before the aspiration is lit, who is the leader? Mind. Mind knows the mantras but not the meaning. Therefore we have in the Vedas, may we utter the mantra. Someone, why he is saying may we utter the mantra in the right way? What does it mean? So people think it's all about sound. It's not about sound, just about sound. The rishis were not just trying to, you know, but much more profound. The same word said with a deep sense of aspiration, faith, has a much more profound aspect than when it is just uttered. Ma, 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 ma. When you say ma, it has a power. Ram, 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 ram. It took, you know, there is a story where Shandil was the rishi, Parikshit story, when he is in meditation and or some rishi and his son is there, and one of the king comes and says, I want to meet your father, he is a great rishi and I want some wisdom from him. He said, nothing, I'll tell you. He will tell, I know by now what he will tell you. He says, what? He says, he'll give you Ram Nam mantra, meaning thereby he says, Ram, Ram, Ram. That's it. You have to do this. And you will find whatever you have to find. I am telling you right now. You don't wait for him. After Rishi comes out of meditation, he says, such and such thing happened. And I told him that you utter the mantra Ram 3 times. And keep doing it in 3, 3, 3. So he says, what? He says, why did I say something wrong? He said, once is enough. Look at the power of those words. Sometimes, you know, I just smile when I say, we'll chant Om 12 times. It means we are so poor in aspiration. Mother, she describes an experience. She says, how in India this word has been potentiated. She says, when somebody came from India and she was in France in a group. And she would have these gods coming before her the moment they... So when Agni was invoked, immediately she saw Agni. So when he uttered Om, and she saw the divine presence filling the room. That is the power of the word. It's not about how many times with, you know, right hand, left hand with a mala, morning, evening. God is everywhere, in everything, at every moment. Basic thing, fundamentals. As, you know, in medical school, one of the things that our teachers taught us, always keep your fundamentals intact. How much ever medicine will advance, if you don't have your fundamentals right, you will mess up, which is so true. Fundamentals should be right. So, aspiration is that. And it may be with word, it may be without word. It can scatter every darkness. And with, she has also used a word for aspiration, courage. Because aspiration is moving forward. So it directly contradicts fear. You can't move forward without courage. In fact, mother has even said, if you are afraid, better you don't take to spiritual life. Fear and yoga do not go together. They don't go together. Just like ambition is dangerous to spiritual life. If one is doing spiritual life so that one can become a teacher or a master or a preceptor, that's not spiritual life. That's anything but the true spiritual life I'm talking of. So courage is moves us forward. Even if nothing is seen, one takes a step, you'll reach somewhere, start that. So aspiration is the first petal. Then there are three things which come together. Faith, devotion and surrender. Something which people are not willing to listen. They straight away talk about meditation. When in Bangalore, every morning I used to go, myself and my wife, morning 5:30, we would go to the bhavan to do all the work, cleaning and everything. Because that's how it should be done. It should not be through servants and all they come. It's such a privilege and opportunity to serve Mother and Sri Aurobindo this way. So another wing commander on the lift, he asked me, So, Alokji, where do you go every morning? I said, I go to Sri Aurobindo Bhavan. Oh, to do yoga? I said, yes. He said, it is very good for health. And he started, you know, I also do some. Thank God he didn't ask me which is your favorite asana. I would have said Shirsasana and Savasana. But he would have not surely understood, because Shirsasana to me is you should be ready to have your world turn upside down. That's what yoga does, for starters. There is a way we look at life. There is a way we look at things. There is a way we value things. Mother uses the word reversal. Everything changes. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasya jagrati sayami. What everybody calls as night, let's party, the yogi keeps awake. Ah, this is my time. This night is not about keeping awake at night. But when you are alone, when everything is cut off, that's what night is. When there is darkness, that's when the yogi is awake. Tasya jagrati sayami. So this is the courage. This is these three things which are required are faith, devotion and surrender. So one of them which is so important is faith. And the mother used the word that in fact both these things, that when you pass through darkness, and yoga brings its own tunnels, because yoga is shortcut. So shortcut is not climbing the mountain but going through the tunnel. So what do? Sometimes tunnels come. So there is a line in Savitri. Courage, their armor. Faith, their sword. They must walk. Children and soldiers of the armies of light. Two things which protect us. Courage and faith. This faith in what? Faith is that there is the divine presence within me. You know, in Tulsidas, Ramcharitmanas, one of my favorite lines, and of course favorite books, where Hanumanji is about to jump into the den of the Asura. Ravan, he is no ordinary fellow. So he is thinking, what should be my approach? Should I go this way, that way? Of course he is both wise and Balbuddhi, Vidya, everything is there. So then he writes very beautifully, Tulsidas, that he gets this inner sense. Pravishi nagar kije sab kaja hirday rakhi kaushalpur raja. Do all that you have to do, but do it with the sense of the divine presence in the heart. Before we realize the presence, one has to have the faith in the presence. And frankly, if there is no faith, again, what are we doing? So faith in the divine presence in the heart. That's enough. We don't have to, divine will do this, he will do that. He will take care of my desire, wish. He may not. That's his will. But he is there. That's enough. When a child goes into a market and mother or father are there, he may cry sometimes. Parents may buy some candies, may not buy. But at the end, he knows that I must hold on to these guys. Otherwise, there will be a Hindi movie where mele mein chhoot gaye, and then you are rediscovering, seeing the locket or the tattoo dramatically. Bhaiya, no. Whatever be the thing, just to hold on to the divine presence, or even better, to be held by the divine. That's all that is required. That's what faith is. Faith is not that, oh, God is with me, therefore now, you know, this will happen, my wish will be fulfilled, my son will get admission in, you know, in... Okay. I was going to say Harvard and this is the highest ashram school. But if God doesn't do that, He is much more wiser. People often ask, they say, if you want to get admission in ashram school, what should we do? I said, surrender to the mother, she knows best what is good. Otherwise, later on you will say, oh, I wish he studied outside. So faith is Kalyan Shraddha. Whatever happens, she knows best. And she gives such a freedom. And often I say, meet so many people, I said, you know, the amount of faith people in, I've sometimes told to some of my patients also, may not have liked it. I said, the amount of faith you have in me or doctors and medicines, I wish you had a fraction of it in the divine. And sometimes I say it paradoxically, you know what, in your room you should hang the photograph of all the famous doctors in the world instead of photograph of God. Faith that whatever happens, He is there, that's all. After that, rest is understood. How He will take us, we are children, we don't know. Hum agyani, hum kya jane, ye ho, wo ho, ya kuch na ho. We don't know what is really good for us. So that is faith. A faith dependent on outer conditions is not faith, but a calculated belief or a rational belief based on proof, evidences. But faith is the light of the soul. It knows the divine is there and nothing can. How to cultivate faith? Ask from the mother. Stay in the company of those who are full of faith. Read the books which help develop faith. And as a corollary, avoid the company of those, unless you have become so strong that your presence will instill faith, full of doubts. Avoid all kinds of books in the name of wideness and freedom. So if one wants a journey, otherwise it's okay. No taboo, nothing. So faith, cultivating faith. And along with faith goes devotion. Devotion is something so beautiful. We have forgotten about it. God is impersonal Brahman. So nowadays it's in fashion, Nirguna Brahman. But normally it's not even for the sake of Brahman. The advantage of Nirguna, see, a lot of Buddhist teaching nowadays, people go into mindfulness, all this. Why? Because there is nothing like the divine being. It is very gratifying to the ego, sorry to say. There is nobody to whom we have to surrender and pray. There are weak people, chicken-hearted, sentimental fools who will pray to God. God is impersonal. Suryo yatha sarvalokasya chakshu. This is not what the line means, but more or less. That's why it goes. See, Buddhism has spread so much outside India. But not in India so much. Why? For this reason. Because in India, you invariably go back to the divine being, Purushottama of the Gita. We are not satisfied with the mutable Brahman. We are not satisfied with the immutable Brahman. We want the Purushottama, the divine as being. We want to connect with the divine in so many ways. As Hanumanji, as Shiva, as Krishna, as Vishnu and Ganesha and Parvatiji and every aspect of the divine. So this aspect, devotion comes only when we connect with the divine that way. There cannot be devotion if for immutable Brahman. As somebody used to, one of the bhajans, it came up, I think it was an Arya Samaji bhajan, ki hai nirlep narayan kahan chandan lagao main. No, it was about Nirgun. Though there is also something known as Atma Puja, how to worship the Nirgun. But all that apart, the point is there is devotion is, you know, to the divine is one of the fastest path to spiritual life. And it's a tragedy that people don't take it. Or they have devotion, but only for what they can get out of the divine. But the joy of serving the divine, the joy of love for the divine, sometimes I feel people miss out on these two things. Two things which, at least in the ashram, we get instantly. That's something for which I feel so grateful. So, one is devotion blossoms. But more than that, service of the divine, automatically. This is one magic, I would say, with which people are deprived. And I really feel sorry. Because I know some of the best progress, personal life, I am saying, highest experiences, mother is blessed with so many gifts. They all came while engaged in her service actively. Descent of peace, tremendous Visharup darshan, all of them while doing service. And see, actually with Arjun, the same thing happens. Arjun is not sitting in an ashram, but imagine, of all the beings in this universe, name one scripture where the blessed Lord gives his Visharup darshan to anyone. Arjun is the chosen one. What are his credentials? He is not a saffron clad sannyasi. He is a he can kill. In one moment he could destroy a whole world. That is Arjun. And another we hear about it is with the mother. Again in active life, when she has vision of the Supreme, twice he speaks of that. So this, we miss the meaning of God in the world when we, whatever we are doing, of course I use the word ashram because it becomes easy, because in ashram you just cannot work by default. In ashram, because there is no promotion, no paycheck, nothing. So by default, whether you like it or not, you are in the service of the divine. But the same thing by attitude we can do wherever we are. Whatever work we are doing, if we do it, that's the fullness of devotion, is not just putting an agarbatti and, you know, because devotion is understood like that. Every day I do this arati, put this agarbatti. Do we really believe that if I make my parents sit on a chair and do these things, he will be maha happy? Especially if after that he knows what I am going to do. They will be happy if we become like him. Father is most happy when he sees his child is taking up his business. I'm using business in the widest sense. And doing it better, doing it according to his master plan. Will that please him more? Or simply doing every day? I mean, Hanumanji's life. What did he do? So devotion has also become very externalized and for favors. That's hardly, we can't cheat God. That's the good part, good news and the bad news. We may do all this. Ravan did all this. It didn't please him. We have an example with Sri Aurobindo. On one side, there was somebody, devotee, who did sastang pranam. By the time he got up, Sri Aurobindo had walked away. Another, Champaklalji. 1 hour he was lying and Sri Aurobindo is standing. See the difference? And that's why in the ashram, we don't have the show of devotion. In the beginning, when the samadhi was put, people wanted to break coconut. You know, and they started up. Then that's when mother said, please no worship, because worship means in this sense. There is a true worship, which is a different thing altogether. Now people do this and poor Ganpati has to bear it. Sometimes I feel sad. So when I pass, I say, I'm sorry. I wish I could do something for you. You have to bear all this sound and breaking of the coconuts and all this, you know, water. It's not a very healthy sight for a sensitive God to bear. But it's okay. They are doing it in good faith and it's fine. But true devotion is a movement of the heart which gives itself to the divine, asking nothing in return. It just wants to love God for the joy of loving. And isn't that actually love in its essence? So as I said, khud ko dena pyar hai, baki sab vyapar hai. All these human calculations in love, what you are going to get, what is the paycheck, all this is business. It's okay, but you should know this is business. It's not love. Love is the urge to give. And that's why human beings can't hold this power, because the ego cannot allow us. So devotion. And with that comes surrender. Surrender is not every day I do surrender to God. As someone told mother, "Mother, surrender is over, you teach something else." I said, "Oh, is it over? What is surrender? Surrender is to give one's life completely. After that, you cannot say, you know what, actually this is my life, my way. If I have surrendered, you see, in Bangladesh war, General Niazi surrendered to the Indian Army, General Arora at that time. How silly it would have been after that, you know what, but I want to live my way, you provide me a luxury hotel, you would have said, my dear, you have surrendered. You have signed a document. We may do it or we may not do it. You can't dictate conditions. So there is nothing like conditional surrender. Surrender is again giving oneself, presenting oneself to the divine, before the divine. And after that, to obey the divine and to accept whatever the divine gives us or takes away from us, or doesn't give us, or deny us, all that is received with joy and gratitude, because he knows best. So surrender is that, about giving oneself. But after that, one has no more claim to anything. After that, one cannot say, you know what, this is my wife and I want to spend a holiday, please arrange something for her. In ashram, if you say this, no, people laugh. So often, you know, your wife and all this, because in ashram this concept automatically drops. Not that there is no wife or no husband. But each one has to surrender independently in one's own joy. It's nothing automatic. So surrender means, now my wife does not belong to me but belongs to you. Meaning thereby I have to look after her. Not that she doesn't belong to me. That's one half of the story. The other half is, whomever one loves doesn't belong to me, belongs to the Lord. So we have to take care. The Lord has given. But I cannot own and possess. I cannot lay claim to her property. I cannot lay claim that she will cook food for me. Nothing. But she has been given to me, or he has been given, and I have to take care. So that's where surrender comes. The wealth that may be with me, we don't have to throw it away and put ourselves in rag. But when I use it, I should be clear that this is mother's money. And I should not just throw it around, waste it on just Amazon and I don't know what is next. Blinkit. No, something is there. Okay. I still know only Amazon. I have never been there. I don't have an account. But I know, because sometimes parcels come. So the thing is that, you know, okay, when you need it, it's fine. But it's not that divine is going to punish or be angry, oh, you bought. No, but just your attitude. I have surrendered to the divine, this belongs to the divine, let it be used in the best way. And that use includes when you wear a dress, it should be a decent dress. He doesn't want us to be in rags. Imagine wearing a Fatehal kapda and going to your mom and saying, "Mom, you know, I chose this torn, dirty cloth from the market." She'll say, "Get lost, change it." But the spirit is different. It's not dressing up to impress the world. It's dressing up to be before the Lord in your beautiful way. So it changes the whole perspective. So surrender is not denying things, but surrender is to use everything now for the sake of the divine. Is to live by whatever the divine grants or does not grant. It's to obey the divine. And finally, there is this perseverance, patience, endurance. They are different shades of the same thing. So once again, I am emphasizing, because I see this very often. These 3-day, 7-day courses of spirituality by giving some dollars, it's sheer nonsense. Of course, those you are giving are benefited. I mean, by all means, poor fellows, I should not, you know. Like often people say, is it okay to hold these rituals? I said, yes, it helps the poor. Pandit, he has learned After all, he has invested so much time. And now you can't just leave him in the lurch. So give him. But don't think God will be pleased suddenly because you have got a ritual done. But it's okay. Probably he will be pleased. Maybe some people around. But the divine is authentic. He is real. And he loves authenticity. He loves that we treat him like a living, real being. So perseverance is required. Now recently there was something on Auroville. So people said, oh, Auroville, this difficulty, utopia this, utopia that. I said, you know, you have forgotten there was a phrase. And the phrase was, Rome was not built in a day. I said, Auroville is not built in a century. If Rome was built over a period of time, if you look at why Rome, because one of the most structured, organized civilizations. If you look at the Roman civilization, especially when you see Augustus Caesar, the kind of, after that, it, 3 centuries, then it declined. But I am saying Augustus Caesar because he was a vibhuti of Sri Aurobindo. How, you know, the kind of organization which was their strength. But what didn't happen before that? There was Ecto Brutus. There were many things that happened before that. So even about India, when people say, I said, India's story has just begun. Don't be in a hurry. So this is how Auroville is not built in a day, a century, nothing. It's twinkling of an eye. You are building a city of the future that the world needs. You want to do a quick shot work and suddenly organize, you know, machines and people and call. No, it doesn't work like that. In ashram, look at how ashram has grown. Entire Sri Aurobindo till 1950, let me use that way. How many disciples were there? 250 or 150. I'm forgetting that name, number. But between 150 to 250. Sri Aurobindo could have easily called people. In fact, Tagore came and told Sri Aurobindo, if you go to Europe, Europe will be eager to listen to you. And Sri Aurobindo says, when Europe needs the teaching, it will come here. That's called patience. He never, such a contrast, get more disciples, get more people to do the course. No, there is no such propaganda in Sri Aurobindo. True conversion is an inner conversion. So you see that happens. And so one has to persevere. It's a long, these parts of nature have been tuned. There is the animal, the asura, the rakshasa, the pishacha, the pramatha, the pashu, the vanara. All these are our cousins trailing behind. The tail has vanished. But they are still trailing. When they will come up, a very well-behaved person. Mother uses the story of the charity bazaar in France, where all the gentlemanly people wearing hat and suit with a stick, the moment there was fire, they were the first one to push everybody out. They were beating with the stick to go out. So, yoga is not a charity bazaar where you go and pick up things and make a thing. It's a long journey because there are many parts which take time. So if one is not patient, if sometimes you have to work upon the same thing several times. See, when the first bulb was discovered, how many times Edison failed? The first flight, Da Vinci dreamed or drew the plans somewhere in 1500, 1600, I'm forgetting the age. Valmiki wrote about it way back, and 1800, and the Wright brothers made something. Now we have entered the space age. So it takes time. This journey goes through life sometimes. So impatience, haste delays it, and it's a sign of lack of surrender and faith, especially those who want experiences. I want experiences. So patience, perseverance, endurance. Endurance is the journey will bring all kinds of things. There is a line in Savitri so touching when the queen prays to Narad about her daughter Savitri because she's sensing something is going amiss. She's saying, let one life unwounded pass. So much Sri Aurobindo says in that. Is there anyone who has never been wounded? Then he was a robo. They are part of it. You have to learn to endure it. The ancient, Arya culture. What was the Aryan culture? Something like, the Maori tribes. You have to stay blindfolded in the jungle whole night. And then, if a lion attacks, you have to kill the lion all by yourself. But in India, it was the ideal of the Arya, which was much higher. And you didn't become mature unless you faced a few wounds. If somebody has never met with problems in life, that means he's in kindergarten. Only kindergarten children are protected. As they say, sissy babies. So challenges are there to help us grow. Endurance is about that. Like that ship through which Shackleton sailed to Antarctica. It's the ship sank, but Shackleton immortalized his name because as a captain and the leader, he ensured that 1.5 years they survived on iceberg and not one person died. That was his ability to inspire hope. And no food, nothing is left. So they are hunting literally seals. They had no choice. Using their fat to light up. So this is endurance. So if one is not ready for, these are the qualities which create the inner climate for the yoga to blossom. So if you see somewhere a blossoming flower of yoga, don't imagine the curated life that is presented. There is nothing like a curated life. All the yogis have gone through severe challenges, and the greater the accomplishment, the greater the difficulties. They who go through them, they arrive at the fullness. Whether it be Rama, Krishna, Sri Aurobindo, the mother, or the divine within us. So this is the psychological perfection. Okay, so we are done. Okay, thank you so much.